Okay. Okay, so week number three of biotech, not whatever we called it, frontiers in biotechnology. So we're going to talk about the issue, halachic issues in genetically modified foods, organisms, and the like. So half of it will be the issue that Ellie mentioned, which is the kashrus of animals that were that had genes from non-kosher animals introduced into them. The shaila, the first extensive treatment of it. There's like treatment here and there. The first extensive treatment was Rav Bakshi Daron, that I know of at least, when he was the chief rabbi of Israel. He was asked as the chief rabbi, and he has a tshuva, which if you look in the introductory footnote in Rai Heber's article, it says, my article is based heavily on the tshuva of Rav Bakshi Daron, as will much of this year. That'll be the second half of this year. Before we get the question of the kashrus of something that has had an outside gene introduced, we need to talk about whether it would be mutter to do that in the first place. So just to frame what we're talking about, genetically modified foods or organisms. So there are different ways that you can modify things genetically, at least at the moment, right? You can insert genes from animals into plants, or from usually from animals into plants. Right, we introduce the genes from certain fish for certain sort of cold water fish into tomatoes to make them resistant to cold. All types of things that we can do. You can also change the genome itself, either of plants or of animals, to propagate certain traits. Now, traditionally, this was particularly hard in animals to sort of modify the DNA itself. It's gotten much easier just in the last few years through a method known as shorthand as CRISPR, or the gene CRISPR. I forget the whole thing, what it stands for, something, whatever it is. It has a long name, but basically now we're able to do it even in animals relatively cheaply. It used to be that the equipment to change the DNA of an animal cost about $50,000. Now it costs $30, which is a bit of a difference. Not the entire process, but the equipment itself costs about $30 because we can have guided RNA, which will introduce a modification to the genes. So there's all different ways that we can modify the genes of plants, of animals, and the like. The first question we have to ask is, okay, are you allowed to do that, right? Can you introduce the gene from an eel into a tomato, or from an apple into a tomato, for that matter, or from an orange into an apple, or whatever you want to do, can you do that or not? So what potential iser could there be? Kilayim, right? The iser here that really suggests itself is kilayim. The pasuk tells us number two, et chukotai tishmoru, bem techolos arbiya kilayim, techolos izra kilayim, uvegid kilayim shadnez lo yale alecha. We introduce three prohibitions of mixtures, of making mixtures. One is what we call shatnez colloquially, meaning our clothes, not mixing wool and linen. But the other two are crossbreeding of animals, or crossbreeding of plants. So the first question I have to ask is, okay, well, if we're going to introduce genes from, let's say, one animal into another animal, or one plant into another plant, or an animal into a plant, I guess theoretically a plant is an animal, but I don't know what that would look like, is that a violation of kilayim? And that question we have to attack really on two levels, right? One is, does it formally violate the prohibition of kilayim? And the second is, even if it doesn't formally violate kilayim, does it violate the spirit of the law of kilayim, and what implications would that have? So the poskim here divide. One more point before we get to it. We would further have to ask and distinguish between different cases of introducing genes into plants and animals. One way to do it is to actually take genetic material from one plant and introduce it into another plant. The other way is to introduce a replica of genetic material, or a a lab created version of genetic material into a new plant, right? Where there we would be a step removed from the original plant. Would that be problematic? So let's start with the first case. We're actually introducing the genetic material from one, let's say, plant into another plant. Okay? Is that or is that not usr? Now, obviously, if you were going to actually graft the plants together, that would be a problem, but would it be a problem to simply introduce new genetic material? So, Rabakshi Doron, in this tshuva that basically becomes the beginning of the discussion for most modern writers, argues that there is no problem of kilayim, and his proof is primarily from a Gemara number 3, where the Gemara describes, it's in the middle of a longer discussion, of different practices that people and cities used to do that Chazal either liked or didn't like. So the Mishnah says that Shisha Dvarim Asu Amshe Yericho, the people lived in Yericho, there were 6 practices they had. Al Shlosha Michu Biyadam, Al Shlosha Lo Michu Biyadam. There were 3 things that the Chachamim protested, and 3 they didn't protest, meaning 3 that they agreed to and 3 that they disagreed with. The Eluhein Shalom Michu Biyadam. And these are the 3 practices that they didn't protest. And the first one is Markivin Dikalim Kolayom. They used to graft trees all day. Now, what does that mean? So here I gave you actually the English, because otherwise it's a bit hard to figure out what they're doing. So Markivin Dikalim Kolayom, Hechi Avdi, what exactly was it that they did that Chazal were okay with? So Amar of Yehuda, Maisi Asa Dara, Vishikra de Dafna Vikimcha de Sairi de Rami Bimana de Lochalfil Abraham Yomen, Umirat Chiluhu Vishadi Luladikla Bilibe. Vikol de Kai Barba Amoti De, Ilo Avdi Lehachi Savoy La Alter, and Rachre de Ravar Manchi Kufra Dikra Linikvusa. So what does that mean? You look at the English. Right, so how did they perform this grafting? So Yehuda said they brought fresh myrtle, strong beer made from the fruit of the laurel tree, and barley flour that was cast into a vessel, and 40 days had not passed since it was ground, and they took this mixture and they boiled them together and poured the mixture into the core of the palm tree. And they would also pour the mixture into all the other trees standing within 4 cubits of it. And had they not done so, the surrounding trees would immediately wither, because the tree that received the treatment would grow faster at the expense of the surrounding trees. And Rav Acha, the son of Rava, said they placed a branch of male palm tree on the female, and by so doing, the female tree would yield fruit. So whatever exactly is going on here, as Rabakshi Daron notes, the simplest understanding is that while it is prohibited to cross-breed, right, and cross-plant and species, that's kilayim, the Gemara seems to assume that it is not prohibited to introduce, you know, material from within the plant into the other plant. Right? It seems to only be a problem if you actually, I don't know, graft a lemon onto, an orange tree, right? Or to mix, you know, to cross plant in your field. But to take not exactly genetic material, but to take material from within one plant and introduce it into another plant to give it fortified genetic qualities, the Gemara was apparently aware of some rudimentary form of this, and the Gemara says that it's mutter. So based on this, Rav Bakshi Daron says, you see that kilayim is only when you actually plant 2 species of plants together, but not when you introduce quote-unquote genetic material from one plant into the other to change the qualities of the plant. And that's Rabakshi Daron's main proof, that there is no violation of kilayim in the creation of genetically modified plants or genetically modified animals. What you see from here is that introducing quote-unquote genetic material, or whatever they were doing, in Kal Vachomer, our genetic material, which is so much, you know, there's less halachic mamushes to it, there's less reality to it, it's microscopic, so for sure it's going to be permitted. Why would you disagree with this? So if you look, and this is from the Chazon Ish, if you look in 4 and 5, the Mishnah in Kilayim says as follows. The Mishnah says that Ein Mevi'in Elon be Elon, Yerek be Yerek, Velo Elon be Yerek, Velo Yerek be Elon, Rehuda Matir, Yerek be Elon. In the context of Kilayim, the Mishnah says you don't bring a tree with a tree, a vegetable with a vegetable with a tree with a vegetable. Rehuda allows a vegetable with a tree. What does that even mean? So, if you look at the at number 5 in the Tosfos Yontif, he comments and he says, "What does all this mean?" V'hainu shesover Rabbi Yehuda the davka k'shal yedei harkava hein misachin v'nas al yedein pri o yerek mishune behu asra Torah mishum kilayim. He said, "Only when you graft the fruit or vegetables together and it creates a new fruit." Is it also because of kilayim? Vizet dafka be'ilon v'ilon, o yerek v'yerek. That's only a tree and a tree, or a vegetable and a vegetable. Aval yerek v'ilon, she'enon misachin lihishtanos, but a vegetable and a tree don't affect each other, right? They don't. Their properties don't meld such that it actually produces a new vegetable. That was yerek v'pri'acher. Af al pi she'yonkim zem yizeh lo asra Torah. So even though they do get nutrients from each other, it's not prohibited. So without getting to exactly what the details is, the Chazon Ish points out that in this Mishnah, at least the way the Tosfos Yontif understands it, mixing the qualities of a fruit and a vegetable would be problematic if it would create a new fruit or vegetable. If it doesn't, it's not problematic. But if it does, so mixing the qualities of a fruit and a vegetable is kilayim. So if you look, I gave you them both inside in number 6 and 7. On the right side you have Rabakshi Daron, who tells you why he thinks it's permitted, right? Ha'im yesh isra b'handasat genetim mishum kilayim, right? Is genetically engineering something osur because of kilayim? So he says, ha'she'ela rishona ha'oleh me'eleha im ein isra b'yitzur gidulim mirkavim miminim shonim b'handasat geneti mishum isra kilayim. The first question you have to ask, is it osur because of genetic engineering to perform genetic engineering because of kilayim sharei tarasher lahar kiv lizrots machim minim shonim ayotrim zan me'orav, because you're not allowed to plant two species together that will create a new species min b'sheno mino. So iser kilayim bizron bilanu valichaim shasra taro huva maaseh ha'achalav v'lo b'tzel tzav. He said no, the prohibition formally only applies to the act of planting of two vegetables together, two fruit together, mivad klai kerem shasrim b'hanah, besides for klai kerem, which is different, u'maisa ha'achla ha'asar rak ilan b'ilan yerek b'yerek shazmachim omdim b'fnei atzam, and only is asar when you have two distinct trees and you plant them together. U'machliim osam yachat b'handasad netit machdirim b'ezrat chagdak ogenim b'zrika latzemach, but by genetic engineering you're putting the qualities in, the genes in. That's not called cross-planting. Sharei again, eino samech, because the gene itself can't grow. And he adds, you can't see it with the naked eye. It's not independent, right? A gene, if it's not in something, does nothing. It's a code, right? But it has no reality by itself. And therefore, ein kol iser lahashpia latzemach v'gidulo v'etrashka. There is no prohibition to affect or improve the way something will grow. There's no problem to inject materials that will help something grow. Even if they come from another plant, how do I know? It's an explicit Gemara in Psachim, as we saw. On the other hand, the Chazon Ish in 7 says no. Hine lomanu shlosha chalukot. There are three levels of cross planting. What are they? One is im markiv davar she'ein tzomeach ela shehi nivla bi'ilan umeitiv tzmichana ilan mutar. Right? How is the Chazon Ish going to get out of the Gemara in 3? So he says there's three levels. One is where you introduce material that gets absorbed entirely into the first plant, and that which you injected loses its identity. So he said that is permitted according to everybody. V'ahainu hadamar b'psachim nunvav dinitanim b'leva dekal asa dar v'shichra d'dafna v'chimkla zayr v'lasrin mishum ilon b'ilon v'yerek b'ilon elosh en kol elon b'kablim koach atzmicha elahi ashkod me'ad dekel v'chein amri b'yerushalmi, etc. He said in that case the tree exists independently. You're just introducing something in that loses its identity as soon as it is absorbed into the tree. That is permitted because the original tree doesn't get a new identity, it just becomes stronger. It's like adding fertilizer. The second level is v'yesh markiv shemesachim u'modnidin min chadash v'yesh melachin v'apiri einan mishtaneh shnei hakavareilu asurim. But sometimes you introduce things together and they create a new fruit, and that's for sure asur. And sometimes the plants do join, even if the fruit that's created isn't different, but the plant itself does join. In that case, he says it'll be asur. So near din chiluk bar kava bein markiv guf. The markiv sraf, and he said there's no, on that level, if you're actually changing the fruit for sure, then there's no difference between introducing a new plant or introducing sap, right? Like the case in the Gemara in Psachim. And therefore, it seems like the Chazon Ish would say that no, genetically engineering, you know, introducing the quality from a tomato into an apple would in fact be prohibited, especially if it's going to change the nature of the fruit or vegetable that is created. That is the seeming position of the Chazon Ish. However, that's not totally clear, because the Chazon Ish is talking about introducing sap, right? Introducing like physical, visual material from one plant into another. What the Chazon Ish doesn't actually deal with is what happens if you introduce genetic material. And as many later writers have noted, even the Chazon Ish might be more lenient. If you look at 9 for a moment, just skip. This is an article by Akiva Wolf. I don't know who he is. But he noted, and this is a point that Rishon Zalman makes. We'll see in just a moment. But the simple read is, he said, it should be noted that the genetic material from a donor species can be synthesized in the laboratory, which would probably avoid any halachic problems said above. Right? The Chazon Ish, A, isn't really talking about genes. He's talking about sap. And B, even if he would apply it to genes, he would presumably only mean the original, right, gene that you extracted from said tomato that you're introducing into an apple. But if you took a gene from a tomato and then duplicated it, right, so now every level which is removed from the tomato is no longer tomato material. It's just genetically identical to that which you would find in a tomato. So even according to Chazon Ish, that might be mutter. And that's what you find in number 8 in Rosh Hashanah Zalman Orbach. Right? With regard to genetic engineering, right? You introduce cells from one to another, from one vegetable to another, one creation to another, and therefore you change the qualities of the second thing that you're introducing it into. He says, on the one hand, I tell you, you can't tell me it's invisible, because who cares if it's invisible? The whole point is that it's significant and you're looking at it in a microscope, so that I won't tell you it's invisible. That doesn't help you. But let's say for animals, first of all, I would tell you that for animals, it's no problem at all, because animals, he thinks, crossbreeding is only a problem if you actually crossbreed them. Like, you take them and you make them, right, breed. Right? Introducing genetic material, I would only even entertain that it's a problem if it's, you know, the tomato and the apple, not if it's an eel and a, you know, whatever, a salmon and a, we won't get into cockroach yet, a salmon and a tuna. The rock bar kavad eitzim near the shapir osur. Right? Maybe kilayim of animals is an isser in the act. Well, by vegetables, by fruit, it's in the result. So maybe there would be osur. Near the shapir osur, afim rakavi hirakali de izrika shal mitz. Asher im haya zorer amit badamal tzmeach klal kisov zazez ramish meinim. So then it would be usher if it's, you know, this meat, this juice, this sap. Shengim arva re'atara amra b'mzecha. Oh, sorry, actually I didn't give you the last part of Rosh Hashanah Zalman. Rosh Hashanah Zalman also to emphasize, why is it usher? Because it's the, right, the sap, right? It sounds like, and it, later in the tshuva he indicates this, that actual genetic material, especially duplicated genetic material, is not going to be a problem, right? The original material might be, but the genetic material, which is duplicated, won't be a problem. So, the Chazon Ish or Shlomo Zalman might build an argument that it could be aser, though lemaisa that might only be the first time you do it, rather than the duplicated genes. And according to Bakshi Daron, there's nothing to even talk about, because introducing genetic material is not called, or even real sap is not called kilayim. And Shlomo Zalman says that under all circumstances, when it comes to animals, there would be no problem of doing this, because there he thinks the result is not what's important; it's the act itself. So that's on the level of the formal prohibition, whether or not it is permitted. The second question is not whether it's formally prohibited, but whether it's within the spirit of the halacha or not. So here, for people who were here 2 weeks ago, and I gave this show last time, I'll say this outside, but I copy the sources here. In basically all these new issues, right, genetic engineering, choosing the gender of your child, cloning, you find a lot of discussion about whether the spirit of the law of Kilayim is violated. Why? Because while Rashi says that the prohibition of Kilayim is a chok, we don't understand it, the Ramban, in his first suggestion, says that the reason it's usher to crossbreed is because you're not allowed to play God. Right? God created X number of species in the world, and he doesn't want new species in the world, because if you're creating new species that he didn't create, you're implying that the world is insufficient as is. So many modern writers say, oh, you can't choose the sex of your child because you're playing God. You can't clone because you're playing God. The response to that is twofold. Threefold. One is that Rashi, as we mentioned, says that Kilayim is a chok, meaning we don't understand the reason. If we don't understand the reason, then you can't forbid other things because it's not in the spirit of the law. If it's a chok, you don't know the spirit of the law. That's the whole point. The second critique is that the Ramban himself raises two different reasons for the Tama Mitzvah. He doesn't think it's a chok, or not a full chok. His first reason is you aren't allowed to play God. His second one is more Kabbalistic and relates to whatever exactly it relates to. But even the Ramban is not convinced it's a problem to quote-unquote play God. The third critique, which won't work for all genetic engineering, is the Ramban says that it's only usher to create a new species. Sometimes when you're using genetic engineering, you're actually creating a new species. Often all you're doing is creating an enhanced old species. Right? Who says creating an enhanced old species is playing God? Maybe it's only creating a fundamentally new species. So there are many reasons to assume that if it's not technically a violation of Kilayim, it's also not a violation of the spirit of the law, but one could make an argument that it would be usher. Okay. Now, what if you did say it was usher? Let's say you did say it was usher. So that would say that a Jew can't do it. But can we? Two questions. One, can we ask a non-Jew to do it? And two, if a non-Jew does it, can we benefit from it? So, first let me ask you, is a non-Jew forbidden to violate Kilayim, right? Is a non-Jew allowed to crossbreed something? What would you say? Right, so you would say, probably not, right? But it's in fact a machlokas in the Gemara. In the Gemara, number 12, right, the first half of the sugya, which I didn't put here, everybody knows, which is that the position that we seem to Paskin like, that there are seven mitzvahs b'nei Noach, right? And in those seven is not a prohibition against crossbreeding, right? It's Eirim and Achai, right? Birkas Hashem, Zeila, Dinim, Hereg, Avodazar, Gilirai, is fine. But not Kilayim. But in number 12, Rabbi Elazar argues, Rabbi Elazar, Omer, Af, Al HaKilayim. Rabbi Elazar says, no, there's actually an eighth. There's an eighth mitzvah of B'nai Noach, and that is Kilayim. They're not allowed to crossbreed. Now, what does that mean? Mutarim B'nai Noach Lulvosh Kilayim, right? Shatnez, they're allowed to wear. Vilizroa Kilayim, they don't have a violation of plants. Kilayim, that is permitted. Einazer Ela Barvaz, Behema Barvaz, Markovas Elon. There are a lot of, you know, plants, two species in the same field, that they're not prohibited about, but actual crossbreeding of plants or animals, according to Elazar, even non-Jews are prohibited. And that's the eighth mitzvah of B'nai Noach. Now, do we paskin that way? So, the Rambam in number 13 sounds like he paskins that way. The Rambam says, Mipia Kabbalah Shebnei Noach Asurin Barvas Behema Barvas Ilon Bilvan. We learn that non-Jews are in fact forbidden to crossbreed at least animals and trees, Vein Haragan Alein, but they don't get killed, meaning it's not one of the primary Sheva Mitzvahs Vein Noach. The second half is not relevant for us. So the Rambam seems to actually paskin that if you think genetic engineering is forbidden, so then it would be forbidden presumably not just for Jews, but for non-Jews, because the Rambam paskin is like Rabbi Elazar, which is very strange, because it's against the Stam, it's against the majority position of the Chachamim. There's another problem, though, right? There's two problems with the Rambam. One is that, since when do we paskin like Rabbi Elazar against the Chachamim? The second problem is the Rambam seems to contradict himself a perek earlier, because in 14 the Rambam says Al Shisha Dvarim Nitzavu Adam Arishon. There were six mitzvot given to Adam. Al Avodah Zarah because Hashem Shvichazam Megillah Raz Al Gezev Al Dinim. Avol Bisha Kulan Hein Kabbalah Biyadenu Mi Moshe Rabbeinu Vadas Notlen Michlal Divrei Torah Yireh Shelo Shal Elu Nitzavu Hosav Noch Eirem Menachai Shem Rachvas Arbe Nafshev Damol Zechel Nimtzu Sheva Mitzvot. Right, the Rambam in Perek Tassel Achalav tells you there's only seven mitzvot. Right, so you have two problems with the Rambam. One, why would he paskin this way? And two, did he even paskin this way? Because he has an internal contradiction. So the Achronim try to figure out which one did the Rambam actually paskin like. We can't get into all the positions here. So it is theoretically possible that according to the Rambam, if it is usur to genetically engineer something, then not only would it be usur for Jews, it would be usur for non-Jews, but A, it's not totally clear the Rambam paskins that way. If he does, it's not clear why he would paskin that way. How would we paskin? So if you look in 15, on the one hand, Shulchan Aruch writes, "Asur lizroa kilayim leovid kochavim." You can't have a non-Jew crossbreed something. But some of the Achronim assume that Shulchan Aruch paskins like the Rambam, that it's actually asur midaraisa for a non-Jew to crossbreed something. But most of the Achronim assume that no. Even when it comes to actual crossbreeding, the reason you can't, what does it mean when it says Asur lizroa kilayim leovid kochavim? It doesn't mean a non-Jew can't do it. It means a Jew can't tell a non-Jew to do it. But if he does it, it's not Asur. He can't do it on your say-so. And therefore, once it's done, you would have no problem benefiting. And that's what the Shach notes in 16. That Asur lizroa says b'veis yosev u'vaterezav u'vibach kazvatam yishum namir leovid kochavim shvus. They say all the Shulchan Aruch is saying is that you aren't allowed to tell a non-Jew to do it because it's like shlichus. You're telling him to do it. V'cheneker k'moshi yizbarav. V'bidrisha kasav v'niomer shatam yishum nei noach mitzuv v'nakavasa ilon v'arbaz v'hema v'chen kasav v'arambam behedya. The Drisha said, no, it's usur because it's usur midaraisa for a non-Jew to crossbreed. And that's what the Rambam writes. And then the Shach comments, V'lo amin shiatu dvar meilu mipiv. I cannot even believe he said this. I can't believe such words crossed his mouth. Dog kaimelon, the Shiva mitzvah, and Savan Yoch, Vesulo, there are only Sheva mitzvah, and Zmenoch. V'emes, who did Chain Daz Rabbi Eliezer, I understand Rabbi Eliezer Paskin that way, V'ragabra Misos. Din it stavu gamal, her boss, Bame Rakavas, Elam, al Anon, kaimelon, Karabonon, but we Paskin Rabonon. Umashi Kosov, Chain Kosov, Raman, Behedja, Beperik Vav, Meochot Melochim. And even though, yes, the Rambam implies that, I assume he means Perek Yud Halachavav, Ein Sham Lo Remez or Amiza V'Adar Rav Dimei HaRambam Perek Tes Melechaz Malachim Nevor Lehedja Lelo Nitzavu Sheva Mitzvot V'Sheva Mitzvot Avos Chavim Gil Resh V'Chazam Gezel Dinim Berchaz Hashem V'Yer V'Nachai V'U Pashut. Right, the Rambam contradicts himself. I may not know how to understand it, but the Rambam presumably means something else in Perek Yud. Maybe he means it's a problem of Amir L'Nachri, I don't know, but he probably doesn't Paskin that way. So, to summarize the first half of this. First question, is it prohibited to cross engineer to plants, to animals, and the like? Rabakshi Daron says categorically no, it's no problem. Crossbreeding is only when you have the physical, two fruit, your plants, you're grafting them onto the same tree, or you're taking two animals and you're forcing them to procreate. Taking material from one, introducing to the other, is explicitly mutter in the Gemara in Psachim. Rav Shlomo Zalman and the Chazon Ish argue that that's not always true. It's only permitted to introduce external material if it's only strengthening the quality of that which you're introducing it to, but if it's creating something new, that is a prohibition of kilayim, at least according to Rosh Hashanah in the case of plants, though not animals. So maybe they would say that it's usur to genetically engineer in this way. On the other hand, that may only apply to the original gene from the tomato that you're introducing to the apple, but the genetic material which is then duplicated may have no halachic significance, even according to the Chazon Ish and Rosh Shlomo Zalman. That's question one. Question two, even if it's permitted technically, is it against the spirit of the law? So some might say yes, because you're playing God, and that's what the Ramban said is the problem with Kilayim. On the other hand, you might say no for three reasons. One is the Ramban himself isn't convinced by that reason. Two is Rashi says we don't know the reason, and therefore you can't extrapolate from it to anything else. And three is that may only be a problem when you're creating something new, but if it's a case where you're strengthening the, you know, you're making the tomato resistant to cold, so you're not creating new species, you're tampering with an existing species, which maybe, even within the spirit of the law, isn't a problem. And the third question is, even if you do assume it's usur, that means a Jew can't do it. What about a non-Jew? So Rabbi Elazar says that kilayim is usur for non-Jews. The Rambam seems to hold that way in the 10th perek of Milachim, though he seems to contradict himself in the 9th perek. Lehalacha, most of the Achronim assume, like the Shach, that whether or not the Rambam ever said it, we paskin that a non-Jew is allowed to crossbreed, and we're allowed to benefit from the result, even if we can't tell him to do it. But once he's doing it himself, it's no problem, and therefore, even if it was prohibited, once it was done by a non-Jew, that wouldn't have any halachic implications for us. So that's the first half of the topic, right? Is it usur to create these things? The second question is, okay, that's all if you're using only kosher species, right? Apples and tomatoes, salmon and tuna. But what happens if that which you're introducing is a gene from a non-kosher thing? And this, Ellie, I assume, since, you know, you'll know all this from Rabbi Heber, but Rabbi Heber, as he notes in his article, bases this on the Tshuva in the Binyan Av in Rabakshi Daron. So I've given you large sections of Rabakshi Daron here. Okay, but what are we even talking about? So the question that came up, it first came to the OU. They have an article about it, I think, from 2007 already. But the COR dealt with it last year. Rabbi Heber dealt with it in an excellent article called The Kosher Status of Genetically Modified Salmon. Here's a summary, right? After two decades of exhaustive and rigorous review, the United States and Drug Administration, the FDA, has recently approved the first ever genetically engineered food animal, a fast-growing Atlantic salmon called Aqua Advantage Salmon. Likewise, in May of 2016, the Canadian Food Inspection Agency, which is, I assume, why the COR only dealt with it last year and not in 2007, when it was dealt with in the States, also approved the sale of the Aqua Advantage Salmon. These Atlantic salmon are genetically modified to carry a growth hormone-regulated gene from a Pacific Chinook salmon, which is further engineered to be under the control of an antifreeze protein gene called a promoter from the eel-like ocean pout fish. The genetic modification allows the salmon to grow year-round by increasing natural production of the growth hormone and reducing sensitivity to the cold, all without affecting its ultimate size or other qualities. The fish is said to grow to market size in 16 to 18 months rather than the 3 years that it normally takes Atlantic salmon to mature. The FDA has concluded that food made from Aqua Advantage salmon is as safe as food from other Atlantic salmon. The law does not require food containing ingredients derived from Aqua Advantage salmon to be labeled as genetically modified. While both Atlantic salmon and Pacific Chinook salmon are inherently kosher, the eel-like ocean poutfish is obviously not. So the question that was then posed is, okay, if you introduce the genetic material from a non-kosher eel-like fish into a kosher fish, is it now kosher? The consensus of most of the kosher organizations, as far as I can tell, and most of the post-gim, is that the answer is a resounding yes, it is kosher. No, it's not a problem. We'll look at Rav Akshay Daron in a minute, but if you want the simple answer, right? It was 2001. Roy Ganak was asked this question already a long time ago, and number 19. Here's his summary. They've taken the gene of either a pig or a turkey, and with it they've enhanced this tomato. The OU's position is, and I think also those of other kosher agencies, is that it is indeed a kosher tomato, right? That's pretty simple, right? Straightforward. Tomato with whatever, right, a pig, whatever you've introduced into it, it is still kosher. Why is that true, right? Why should it be kosher? Why should it be not kosher? So why would you say it should be not kosher? Because you've introduced eel into a tomato or into a salmon, right? Okay. Why would you say it is kosher, right? What? It's batel, it doesn't exist halachically, all types of things. Now, why would you say it's not batel, right? Why would you say that we don't nullify this gene? Because it's important, right? It actually changes the quality of this fish, right? It makes it grow in 18 months instead of 3 years, right? We don't normally allow things which are significant to be batel, so that's really the two sides of the question. But Bakshi Daron 18 tells you as follows. He said, why does he think it's mutter? Havaret genim. Now this is, there are two parts to his tshuva. One is the tshuva where he explains the reason, and then the end he has the psak din that the chief rabbi has issued. I just gave you the piece from the tshuva. He said, why is it fine? So he said, havaret genim shemekoram asur ba'achila. Be'im mavirim ba'hadasa genetit genim shel ba'alei chayim asurim ba'achila le'ba'alei chayim mutarim otzmachim mit'oreret ba'ayot kashur ha'ma'achalim. Right, introducing not kosher genes into kosher animals causes kosher problems. B'derech klal, ha'genim uvarim einam achilim. But on the other hand, the gene itself, A, is not edible. Right, so that's one reason it should not be a problem. Two, ein bahem ta'am. Right, they have no taste. And in general, for something to be considered existent halachically, it must have taste. Uvderech yitzuram nit'apshuv nifsalu me'achil ha'kelev. And besides, the chemical process it goes through is halachically the equivalent of spoiling, to the point where it's nifsal me'achelet kelev. It's not edible even by a dog, right? So that's three reasons why this is no longer kosher. Four, mit batlim bioter mishishim machalim. There's less than 60 of it, right? You're changing a gene. It has a lot of an effect, but it's less than 60. Kach she'en she'ila shel tarobet isur ba'ashtalat gen mikor asur litzemach. And therefore, it should be for sure permitted. He said, okay, that'll help you if you're introducing eel. What happens if you're introducing chametz on Pesach into matzah, right? I don't know why you would do this, but if you were doing this, right? Something that's usur and isn't batel, right? So is it usur? He said, no. Ha'izr tzarich liyot begeder machal. Even for chametz, in order for it to be osur, that which you introduce must be considered food. V'hagena mupak, amufak, ein bo shem ochel kol. A gene is not food. So he said, on the level of kashrus, because of bitl, and because it's nifsal me'achel kelv, it's not edible independently, even if it comes from a pig, it is no longer not kosher. Then he said, okay, on the other hand, why would you say it might be osur? Because, as Ellie noted, we have certain categories which are osur, even if they're less than 60. For example, a davar hama'amid, right? Something that gives something its texture, that gives it its, its texture, its staying ability, even if it's less than 60, we say it's significant because you feel the effects. We said, ulam yesh ladun megenem amushtalim l'machal amurgashim meitev motar chadash midin ma'amad sheshpa'atam kayemet v'enem b'teila, right? If you feel the effects of the gene that was introduced, so maybe you should say it's osur. Dugmal motzar chadash shedavko fader bayot kashur hu migban atzimchi sheyesh ladun bo mitam sur ma'amirach v'yono me'atshem adyam imar. And then he brings a whole example. Skip to the last line of this side. He said, ba'andasa genetin ma'agim ben agena miuchad shevekevar ha'agalim migadlim oto bo'ovet shel tarbut tzmachit. We do this for cheese, where we take out the gene and we develop it, but it has an effect. So if you go down six lines, he says, "V'gamim nitbatlu." So maybe you would say, even though it is batel, I mean, it's less than 60, hashpa'atam nikeret kimamid sheino batel. Maybe it's a davar hamamid because it gives it, right? It affects it, so maybe it won't be batel. He says, "No, ulam agenim sheishpiu al gibun achalav savir sheinam kaimim klal." He said that would be true if, in genetic engineering, you introduced the original gene, but you don't. You introduce the replica of the gene. So who cares? Right? Heim rak palud apulah rishonid ve'enam kaimim bagvina. He said, the first gene maybe it was not kosher, but after that, everything is just a duplicate. Like, even though not the rocky de hagenim, ela ba talich mishutav shem of gashman makavim yesh talich ze mishum ze gorim. And at that point, even if the original material, the original gene would be present, it would be one, two, a few genes, plus all the duplicates. And one of the halacha by Ma'amid is that it's only usur if it independently is felt. But if the effects are felt both because of the original gene, which is quote-unquote not kosher, and the duplicate genes, which are kosher, so then we return to the normal rules of bittul. And then davar ha'mamid doesn't count. And since in this case the finished product is a product of both the original gene and the duplicate genes, or maybe even only the duplicate genes, so then it is not prohibited. Etc. And therefore, the Binyanav, Rav Akshi Daron, this position of the OU, and this is the position of the COR, if you introduce a not kosher gene into a kosher animal or a kosher plant, it remains kosher. The original gene that was introduced is not halachically significant, both because it's batel, it's not edible, and even if it's felt, it's not felt independently, it's felt in conjunction with everything else, and therefore it is not usur, and therefore it is kosher. The only possible exception, he says, is if you create something from something which is usur behana'a, right, not just be'achila, then he said it might be usur, right? If you would take, I don't know, basar b'chalav or arla, I don't know, and you would introduce it, that might be problematic, but that doesn't usually happen because, you know, that's not what we're doing. Okay, so that was question one in terms of kashrus, was introducing the gene of a non-kosher animal into a kosher animal, the non-kosher animal into a kosher plant, where, because it's insignificant, we say it is permitted. Correct. They start breeding themselves, I think, with the new gene. I think that's the point. But they look the same, right? They still look the same. They still look like salmon. They just have, whatever, the eel gene in them. What happens if they don't look the same, though? Right? That's the next halachic question, right? First halachic question is, what happens if you introduce a gene, but it still looks like salmon? It has new properties, new qualities, but it is still a salmon. Right? It has new traits, but it's a salmon. What happens if we get to the point where we start playing with salmon and we create salmon, right, genetic salmon, right? They have 99.9% of their genes are still salmon genes, but we engineer them such that they no longer have fins and scales. Or vice versa. We engineer an eel such that it has fins and scales, right? So now you're not just dealing with the question of, is the genetic material that's introduced from the outside, is that going to be a kosher problem? Now the question is this new creation a kosher species? Right? Now the answer to that is one of them has to be kosher and one of them isn't kosher, right? One of those cases is good, one of them is bad. They can't both be good and they can't both be bad. What does that question hang on? So as Rav Akshi Daron notes, what it seems to hang on is the following question. In Lumdish terminology, he calls it siman or siba, right? In English, we call it either causation or correlation, right? As follows. The Torah tells us, in the case of fish, that in order for a fish to be kosher, it needs fins and scales. In the case of animals, it needs to have red split hooves and needs to chew its cud. So that's a machlokas, right? Swordfish independently is a machlokas, right? Rav Schechter likes saying it's kosher. There are poskim who think it's kosher. Most poskim, I don't know, most poskim. Many poskim think it's not kosher. Some poskim think it is kosher. It's a machlokas. Well, I don't know. I don't know, but I know he said it before that it's kosher. You never know what he'll do, but yeah, swordfish is a shaila because sometimes we're not sure how to define the scales, because those scales they start off and then they fall off at a certain point.
Of course, you could say kosher until
right. So that probably not, because we'll see the Mishnah actually has a standard for what it means for something to be a scale, and then the animal will either be kosher or not. The question is really whether that counts, and we'll see. That's in source 21. So here's the question. when the Torah says that a species is kosher that has fins and scales or has split hooves and chews its cud, there's one of two possibilities of what it's saying. One is it's saying that the species which naturally have fins and scales or naturally chew its cud and have split hooves, the presence of those of simanim in the majority of that species indicates that it's a kosher species, even if a specific cow would not have split hooves, right, or would not chew its cud, right? It's a siman, it's an indicator that the species is a kosher species. The second possibility is that it's what's called a siba, meaning it's a cause. Any animal that chews its cud and has split hooves is kosher. Now, therefore, if we were to create salmon without without fins and scales, so either you say that because most salmon have fins and scales, therefore this salmon is kosher because it's about the species. But if you say that, then the eel, which you now give fins and scales, would remain not kosher, and vice versa. If you say that it's the actual presence of fins and scales that makes something kosher, then the eel with fins and scales would be kosher, and the salmon without them would be not kosher. Right? So one of those has to be kosher, and one of those has to be not kosher. So now there is the third group of animals, which is birds. Birds, as the Poskim note, there pretty much is no suffix. Because in the case of birds, the Torah doesn't give you simanim, the Torah gives you a list of species. So in the case of birds, it's pretty clear that what makes something kosher is that it's of the kosher species. And therefore, even if you would, you know, make, you would create a mutated chicken, presumably it would still be kosher because it is a chicken, right? And therefore, chicken, leave birds out of it, because birds seem pretty clearly to depend on the species. But what about animals and fish? So, oh, sorry, actually, I lied. I originally had put in 21 the Mishnah that said what a scale counts as, and then I took it out because I realized we wouldn't have time. So that is a discussion in the Mishnah and Chulin of what a scale counts as, but we'll have to bracket that question for now. Okay, so what is the halacha? Are the simanim, are they indicators that the species is kosher, or is their presence what makes something kosher? So if you look at 21 in the Mishnah has this sort of bizarre case, right? Para sheyolda kimin chamor. If a cow gives birth to something that looks like a donkey, right? V'chamor sheyolda kimin sus. It's talking about the not about kashrus, but it's talking about the exemptions from peter chamor, because only a chamor is obligated. So if you have a cow which gives birth to a donkey, or a donkey gives birth to a horse, patur min habechora, they both don't have the halacha. Shneimer petach chamor shnei pa'amim. In the case of bechor, ache avlad hayulad chamor vanolad chamor, they both have to look like a donkey. Umahim ba'achilo. But then the Mishnah says, are they kosher? So the Mishnah says, behema tehora sheyoldak min behema tmea mutar ba'achila. If a kosher animal gives birth to something that looks like a not kosher animal, it is kosher. Utmeya sheyolda kemin behema teora asur b'achila. And a non-kosher animal that gives birth to something that looks kosher is not a mutter. Shayote matam meitame vayote minatar teora. That which comes from something kosher is kosher. That which comes from something not kosher is not kosher. Dag tame shabal dag teora. And then it gets into fish. So as Rabbi Shidaron notes and many others note, the simplest read of the Mishnah is explicit. At least in the case of animals, it's not about the presence of the simanim, right? If a horse gives birth to something that looks like a cow, it's not kosher, even though presumably, what does it mean to look like a cow? It has split hooves and it chews its cud, right? It's about the parent, meaning the technical species, not what it looks like. And therefore, a whole list of Rishonim and Achronim say that the simanim are just that, simanim, indicators of a species, and therefore an eel which has fins and scales would be not kosher, and a salmon without fins and scales would be kosher. You look at, for example, 22, the Abarbanel in Shmini says, "V'ein hakavona be'elat tanoim shiba'avuram tiyabeimahat meya." These simanim, they don't need to be present in order to make something kosher or not kosher. Ki heim einam osim tahara. ve'atmam, they don't make something kosher. Aval kavana bazeh hi shehem simanim morim al hayod v'imai hi Torah v'edem morei yotmeya. Their presence tells you that the species is kosher or not, and therefore the question seems to be over, right? What matters is the species, not what it looks like. And therefore, if we genetically engineer a salmon to have fins and scales, to not have fins and scales, it's still kosher, and vice versa with an eel. The Rugged Shavron 23 and some others suggest that maybe, even though at first glance you might say that fish and animals should be the same, fish and animals should be the same, he says maybe not. Maybe there's going to be a distinction between fish and animals. He said, "Ach be'emet kach tzvir li l'rabbeinu di'ishnafka min levein simone behemoth simone of." First by of. Digabe behemoth simonim hi atara shalom machmak zirza kasuv. Zeh madar b'gemara barosi shor, etc. Zeh amitahir. Then he continues. Resulim simanim him avdilim o simanim him agormam daravatuma v'chein bedagim chihai gavna simane ovo simane chaya chelvas eragli siman v'eza tar v'eza hiya chaya. The Rugged Trevor suggests this is not true, and the Rugged Trevor says no. Maybe the presence of the simanim is actually makes it kosher. Though it's possible you can distinguish between animals and fish. And definitely between birds and animals, but the Rugged Shavron suggests that maybe we actually do care about the presence of the simanim. But the majority of the poskim take the position articulated by the Barbanel that the simanim are simply indicators of species, and if they're indicators of species, then all that matters is that it's a salmon, and then it's kosher, and an eel, and therefore it's not kosher, and not whether this current salmon or eel has fins and scales. I'll skip Rishon LeZalman for a moment. Now there are other proofs that are brought to this from around Shas. So, for example, if you look in 25, the Gemara has a discussion. Amar Abaye Tarnagolo de Agma Chad Mishmona Sveikosu Vahainu Merdo. There's a certain Tarnagola. Right, turn chicken, a rooster really, a rooster, you should be specific here, which is born in the swamp. And Amar Rapapa says, Tarnagola de Agma Asira, the rooster of the swamp is not kosher, Tarnagolta de Agma, but the female, the chicken of the swamp, Sharia. So what is this rooster of the swamp and this chicken of the swamp? So Toso says, in Chulin, Ein Lefarashin Nekevim Uteraz HaZachar Asur. So Tosos here says it can't be that they're related species, because you can't have a species where the male is not kosher and the female is kosher. Right? Tosos says it must be that these rooster and chicken aren't really roosters and chickens, because kashrus is determined by species. If it's determined by species, then the male and the female have to be kosher, or the male and female have to be not kosher. You can't have something which the male is not kosher and the female is kosher. So Tosos here seems to assume that kashrus is about species, not about the presence of simanim. But in 27, Tosos in Nida says not that way. He says, Azachar asur lefisha ein lo simanei tara. He said, no, they're the same species. The male is not kosher because it doesn't have simanim. The female is kosher because it has simanim. And then he goes back and suggests the other answer, that it's shnei minim. And the Kovach Yerim in number 28, Rav Elchanan notes that the machlokes between the two tosfasim is exactly this machlokes. Is what makes something kosher the presence of simanim, or is it not the presence of simanim, but the species being kosher or not kosher? The majority of poskim, however, say, even though it's true, you can note that there are rishonim that believe that what's important in kashrus is the presence of simanim rather than the species, we seem not to poskim that way. If you look at 29, Shulchan Aruch says, Efroach shenolad mibeitzas nevelo treifa muter v'yishom lo nagin ken l'chili yizoyer. What is going on here? So if you look at this shach, Right, the Shach says, well, Shulchan Aruch seems to be machmir in this case. Uvatar zav hishmin kol agaz uviyafach even the malan olach medavar shenimtim afurus latir b'shaz uchol apotskim gam v'darkei Moshe v'taras chatos kalsav al or isur b'hedr shen dam l'dvara v'chein b'simone there's chatos sham sasam kam v'chaber. I'm debating whether I actually get into this one. Okay, I'm not going to get into this. We don't have time to get into it. If you look in 31 and 32, you'll see that Reb Chaim actually has a chiddush in the Rambam, which may affect how you understand other sources, to suggest that maybe the Rambam disagreed with this, and maybe the Rambam thought that it was about it was about the presence of simanim rather than the species, but. As I mentioned, the majority of poskim, despite the fact that there is a position in Tosfos, and the Rugged Shever holds this in the Rambam, has Reb Chaim in the Rambam, who believe that kashrus is about the presence of simanim rather than about the species. The majority of poskim follow the other position in Tosfos based on the simple read of the Mishnah and Bechorot, that both for fish and for animals, even though you could theoretically distinguish, what matters for kashrus is the species, not the actual presence of the simanim. I gave you yet another source where this appears in 33 and 34. That's in the context of a sugya that comes up in Chulin of Oso Ves Bino, of whether what's called Choshen Lazera Av, whether we care about the father or not for halachic purposes. Again, I'm going to leave that out. That's just another Nachim. What?
Because that takes that kind of goes against a lot of what Rachid Donald is saying, that you can't taste the genes. If it's like a father...
Right, so in that case, you can't just say, right, that it doesn't exist. That's why I don't want to get Choshen Lazerav in a much more complicated sugya. You can look at it inside, you can see the Tosfos thinks that sugya weighs in on this question as well. But the fundamental question that Poskim are asking when you have a fish with which belongs to one species but has the wrong simanim, the question of whether it's kosher or not depends on this question. Are simanim what indicate that it's a kosher species? In which case, a cow which doesn't chew its cud would be kosher, and a donkey which chews its cud would be not kosher. Or do you say that it's about the presence of simanim, in which case that cow would be not kosher and the donkey would be kosher? It is a machlokas rishonim. It is a machlokas achronim, but the majority of the poskim, based on the Mishnah Bechoros and other sources, argue that simanim are probably indicators of a species, and therefore the salmon which doesn't have fins and scales would be kosher lalachan. The eel which has fins and scales would not be kosher lalachan. I gave you that summary in 35. There are Vakshi Daron, Rishon Zalman Orbach, the OU, the COR, right? All rule, as I just said, that simanim indicate what species is kosher, and therefore you can play with the physical look of a salmon as much as you want, it will remain kosher. What would happen at a point when you totally radically change the salmon, so it's, the genetic material is 50-50 or something, then I don't know anymore, right? Because then you have to ask, which one is it? Is it a salmon? Is it an eel? That would already be, different, but that's not usually what we're doing. Introducing a few genes here and there. As for introducing not kosher genes into kosher vegetables or kosher animals or fruit, so that we noted that again, the majority of poskim think that's fine because it's batel, it's not significant, and therefore it's halacha. And for birds, we noted that they're clearly based on species, and therefore a bird, which you would, what would you do with it, right? As long as it's a chicken, it's kosher. It doesn't matter whether it has, there are simanim the Gemara gives for birds, but fundamentally it's about species, about the mesora of species, rather than the simanim. The last two things I'll just note quickly is, because this does come up in some of the literature you'll find online, though not in maybe hardcore halachic sources, is that the Torah in general commands that we maintain our health, and there is a continuing debate as to whether food which is genetically modified is healthy or not. Majority of the scientific community believes that it is healthy, right? And that's why it is legal to be sold both in the United States and in Canada. But there are those who claim that it's not healthy. If it turns out it's not healthy, so, okay, then you have to deal with it like anything else which is not healthy. That's not a kashrut concern. It's a different general halachic concern. But again, the consensus of the scientific community at this point is that it's not. It doesn't affect your health at all. However, and this is the last point, is even though it's true that the majority of the scientific community thinks that genetically modifying food doesn't make it less healthy, there are people who either believe that it's not healthy or for, I don't know, ethical reasons or who knows what, don't like having GMOs. Whatever, you know, yeah, fine, right? New age, Mishigas, fine, whatever it is. But the fact is that whether or not you agree with it, right, the halacha is that in business, anything that you know is significant to the other party, you can't lie about, right? So if there are people who care about whether something is genetically modified or not, you can't lie to them. Even if you firmly believe that the fact that something is genetically modified makes zero difference, health-wise, ethically, legally, even if you're right, as long as there's a significant group of people or even an individual that you're selling to that you know does care, so then by the laws of business, right, and ethics, in business by halacha, then you do have to tell them, right? Again, that's not a GMO question, it's just a halachic reality, an issue that you have to think of in addition to the sort of questions that are local to GMOs. You do have to keep in mind the health issue and the honesty in business issues, which are true across all areas of halacha. Shkoyach, next week will be the